Don't lose your head today on Podcast Magoria. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Podcast Magoria's Halloween A to Z. My name's Autumn.
And I'm James.
And today, folks, we bring you our H movie. H standing for none other than Hereditary. I am so flippin' excited to finally talk about this movie because I have been a fan for many years and have been trying to get James to watch it for just as long.
Yeah, and I finally watched it.
Yeah. I've been like, please watch it. Please, you've got to watch it. You don't understand this joke because you haven't watched it.
Yeah.
And what have you?
And what have I indeed? Yep, this 2018 2 hour and 7 minute long movie. Holy smokes.
Woo.
I think this is the longest one we've got so far.
So far, I believe so. But I feel like it's a necessary 2 hours and 7 minutes. Okay. Probably could shave off that 7 minutes, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah,
but
maybe. I can concur, though 2 hours is a hefty sum for a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely requires a lot of slow burning,
yes,
to get to where you're needing to go. Hey, sometimes your destination takes a little while to get to. And in this age of instant gratification and kids with their TikToks and their Instagram reels and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm hip.
Yeah, Instagram reels,
you know,
is
you got your,
what the kids are liking, your, and totally your, not making fun of.
You got your chap snaps and all that. Sometimes you need something longer than 15 seconds, 30 seconds, or, you know, the every once in a while minute long video. Anything longer than that.
There's
that 10 stuff.
Minute videos. That's on TikTok now.
Who needs, like, I might as well be watching YouTube. What is that? All right. So there's a butt ton of stuff to cover for this movie. So I think that we should go ahead and dig in. I want to go ahead and say now the pacing for this made me nervous going in.
Yeah.
Because it is a incredibly slow moving movie.
Mm-hmm.
Though at the same time, it's not. And I don't know how to kind of put my finger on it. And I've, like, it's been a few days since we've watched it and then gotten to the point of recording, which is unusual for us because it's usually we watch and then immediately record.
Right.
So I've had some time to stew over this movie and I still don't know where I sit on it.
And it's a stewing movie,
it
though.
Is definitely a stewing movie. The movie as a whole, like how it opens is we get, I absolutely adore set design,
mm-hmm,
and I adore the fact that we have perfect miniatures of everything.
Yeah, I am incredibly appreciative of this little opening bit showing kind of all of our sets that we're going to be seeing. And just the transition from seeing these little miniatures to actually being in the movie is such an incredibly awesome, like, shot.
It's incredibly meticulous. And, like, the making of the movie, like, they made, like, all the rooms are, it's a soundstage.
Yeah.
And so they basically have a full-scale dollhouse. And it's like, we're talking, like, Wes Anderson levels,
mm-hmm,
of every little detail having to be perfectly in place.
Yeah.
And though that seems maybe overboard for a horror film, I think the payoff is definitely worth it.
Well, yeah, and this awesome transition wouldn't work if it wasn't set up that way.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the freaking soundtrack that's playing over the entire film,
and yeah,
especially this opening bit, it sets the mood so perfectly.
Yeah, ambiance. It's a big deal in this movie.
It is. And it's not like it's not boring.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
It sets the mood and it makes you just feel enough at unease.
Yeah. So we're introduced to one of our main characters, and thankfully, mercifully, this movie has a very small amount of main characters to keep track of, because it more or less just circles around this one family.
Yeah. And there's four members of the family.
Yes.
Mom, dad. Mom's name is Annie.
Yeah.
Do not ever remember the dad's actual name. Peter's the boy, and Charlie is the girl. So we will refer to Dad as Dad.
Yeah, until I finally find his name in my notes.
Which, I will be honest, he's not in the movie too incredibly much, so yeah. You guys get the picture.
I think that, I found the note. Steve is Dad's name.
Steve.
I think that Steve is almost the audience.
He's
the chorus, you know, if you're looking at a Greek drama.
Yeah, because he's literally just kind of watching all of this unfold around him.
Yeah.
And not really giving much reaction.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever he does speak, I feel like he's saying often what I was thinking.
Uh-huh.
Where I'm like, maybe don't be so. But he's trying so hard. So I guess go a little bit more detail into each one of the characters. This movie's kind of going to be weird to talk about, and so I want to kind of poke into the characters first before we move along through plot.
Yeah.
And that is because, like, Steve is a psychiatrist.
Right.
Annie is a model maker.
Yeah.
A professional
an artist.
Model. Yeah, an artist. Like, she has clients and shit.
Yeah, that's why we see the miniatures, mm-hmm. because that's all of her work.
Yeah. Peter's just a, just a teenage boy in school.
Yep.
Nothing too fancy with
angsty
him.
Angsty teenage boy.
And then Charlie's a little bit of a creepy kid.
Yep, creepy kid.
So very early on in the movie, we start to kind of see that Charlie might be a little different. First of all, when we're introduced to Charlie, Charlie is sleeping in the treehouse. This is also because of the fact that Charlie's dealing with a lot of grief because it turns out it's the day of Grandma's funeral.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's a bummer. That's a hard way to start a film.
Yeah, and Charlie did have a pretty close connection with the grandma.
Yeah.
Even at the funeral, we kind of see her have a moment with the body.
Yeah.
There's also a little character quirk about Charlie, and I'm sure everybody knows, at least from, previews, that this character likes to click her tongue.
Yeah, she does that. And then also, she's a little artist, too.
Mm-hmm.
Must run in the family.
Yeah.
She's got her little doodle book. At the funeral, Annie is giving a eulogy, and it is very clear that there was, at least, some sort of tension between her and her mother. Because she's just like, my mother was a difficult woman. And it's like, it's not your usual eulogy that you would hear. From a family member. It's kind of like, maybe they shouldn't have chose her to speak.
Yeah. Even when they get home, Annie doesn't seem as sad as she should be.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she gets right back to work on her models.
Yeah.
Although Steve, the dad, he is going around and checking on everybody.
Yeah.
He goes to Peter and makes sure that he's doing all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Steve, I find, often is what moves the story along.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, honestly, if it wasn't for Steve, I don't know if the story would know. Camera wouldn't know where to go. It would just kind of hover,
mm-hmm.
On someone being sad.
Yeah.
Or just hanging out or just getting the overall feel of the room. And Steve comes along and is like, hey, follow me. Let's check on these other characters, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
I will say, though, Annie actually does go and talk with Charlie, mm-hmm. and Charlie is incredibly upset about the death.
Yeah. The dialogue here about Charlie's relationship with the grandmother is peculiar because, kids tend to latch on to their grandparents. That's
mm-hmm.
not an unusual thing. So
yeah.
Charlie being upset is not strange. The strange part is how Charlie's talking about how the grandma wishes that Charlie had been a boy.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's
him.
That's a different... That's not what I expected out of this. Charlie's also worried about who will take care of her, as if she has no other family members available. And it's just like, even Annie's just kind of taken back by this, where it's just like, well, I'm your mom. I'm right here damn it. And Charlie's just like, well, you know, when everybody dies, like, who's going to take care of me? And it's just like, well, when's everybody supposed to be dying?
Yeah, kid.
Like, Jesus. I think this is, you know, it's interesting because you're getting to see probably the fact that Charlie has never really recognized or dealt with death.
Yeah.
Prior to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, losing a close family member is never easy, even if you are very aware of death. And so, you know, as Charlie kind of goes along, you kind of see this, like, peculiar obsession with death. After this, like, Annie starts going through some old things and comes across, like, an old photo album and such. But then also, ooh, we get our first spooky moment where she sees the ghost of Grandma.
Ooh.
Oh, shit. Okay,
Grandma,
so
Grandma's haunting the place. Okay, that's what this movie is about.
Yeah, I get it. Like, all right. So maybe doesn't need to be 2 hours about an old lady haunting a house, but okay.
I like that they were so vague about what this movie was actually going to be about.
Yeah.
That when you first watch it, you're trying to figure out what exactly is supposed to be spooky.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
And so when you see this, that is your first assumption. Oh, Grandma's haunting the place. Mm-hmm. Cool. Ghost story.
Yeah. The next day, we see the kids at school, and Charlie is, you know, just doing absent-minded kid stuff.
Yeah. They're taking a test.
Yeah, they're taking a test, but Charlie's not really into that.
And everyone gets distracted because a bird hits the window.
Ah.
Ooh, spooky.
Ah, jump scare. Dead bird.
Peter's not paying attention in class because he's getting texts from his friend asking if he wants to go to a party tonight.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, I got the good stuff, you know?
Yeah. Charlie later on goes outside and finds the dead bird and proceeds to
snip its head right off.
That's a little unique.
That's a little creepy kid thing.
Okay.
Like, creepy kid thing.
Well, yeah, but kids deal with grief in different, unique ways.
You know, maybe that is what's going on here. Yeah. Completely normal for
hopefully,
a kid to do.
Hopefully this stops at birds.
Back at the house, we see Steve receive a phone call from the cemetery, and it turns out that the grandma's grave has been desecrated.
Yeah, yikes. Okay.
Ew, that was quick.
You know, well, maybe Charlie stopped by to say hi to Grandma. I wanted one last hug.
I guess so. Or Grandma wanted one last hug. Steve lies to Annie about why they called, though, because he does not want her to know that her mom's grave has been destroyed.
Yeah.
And good for Steve.
Yeah, probably the right choice.
That would probably be very traumatic.
Yeah.
Especially since it just happened, what, like a day or so ago that they had this funeral?
Yeah.
So
Annie, we kind of learn quickly, is not exactly forthright with Steve about stuff. And I think, like, you can kind of glean, I think, from the rest of the movie that perhaps there's always been this Annie keeping everybody at arm's length.
Yeah.
Because the fact that, you know, with this little thing, she's lying to him about going to go see a movie, and as it turns out, she's actually going to group therapy. But there's a lot of moments where I'm like, you know, I she lies too easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, like, she's just has probably always just never really let him in, which is ironic since he's a therapist.
You know, she could be getting some free therapy, but during this group session, she's just kind of going through her trauma with her mom and how they had an on and off relationship and how could she be sad?
Yeah. It's weird because, like, you know, when you have someone toxic in your life and stuff, that weird balance of not getting closure versus, well, glad you're gone kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a very hard, complicated concept for a person to deal with, and so that's rough. I just realized, do you think that's how Steve and Annie met? Do you think that he was her therapist?
Oh my god.
Like, I mean, they never ever, why would they touch on how they got together? But do you think that's how they got together? Because Annie's clearly had a troubled life.
I don't know. That would be kind of unethical, I feel like, but
maybe that's why he doesn't give her therapy now.
Maybe.
He's like, the once was enough.
You know, I'll accept the headcanon, James.
Yay! Score one for me. So there is only one complaint I have, I think, about so far about this movie. Because the whole movie, I think, is aesthetically beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as far as special effects go, and those will definitely come a little bit later, fantastic. Except for,
mm-hmm.
I don't really care for this Donnie Darko spooky effect that we get a few times. Because Charlie ends up seeing like this like spooky blue light that... It looks like it's from 2001.
Yeah. I feel like they don't do it too often, though, in this movie.
Thank God. Yeah, I think they only...
But this is definitely a little out of place compared to the rest of the film.
And I understand, like, kind of, like, what it is.
What they're doing.
Yeah, what they're doing. But it's also
It could have been executed a little...
Yeah.
Just a tweak different. Back at the house, Peter's asking Mom... Hey, can I borrow the car? I want to go to this party.
Yeah.
And, ooh, Annie is so adamant about Peter taking Charlie to this party.
Yeah. Charlie, by the way, does not want to go.
Yeah, Charlie doesn't want to go. She's a little kid.
Yeah.
Peter's an older teen.
Yeah.
Why would his mom want him to take Charlie to an older teen party?
I think the concept there was to make sure that she was calling his bluff.
Right.
Because, like, she's like, oh, well, you're going to go to this party. You guys are going to do drugs. You're going to be fucking whatever. And he's like, no. There won't be drugs. There won't be booze or whatever. And she's like, oh, well, if it's so safe, take your sister.
Yeah. And Charlie's like, I don't want to go.
Yeah. And she's like, well, tough. You're going. I know exactly. Like, this scene was a little too real for me.
Ah.
Now, I did not experience this through my parents. But, however, I was the almost like the Charlie-esque character in this, where I was the fly on the wall that the parent was just like, oh, well, if it's so good, take Jimmy. And I'm like, I don't want to go. What's happening? Yeah, I was used as the emotional manipulation, which also, like, this is our first real glimpse into the very strained relationship between Annie and Peter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They very obviously there is something very wrong between them.
Annie's got mommy issues, so of course she's going to be an awful mommy.
Yes, yeah. Peter finally begrudgingly agrees to take Charlie to the party. Very typical teen movie party situation. Yep. Kids running
around
everywhere.
The big house, lots of people. Mm-hmm. Everybody is drinking and kissing and all that good stuff.
Charlie very clearly doesn't want to be there. And Peter's just like, hey, I'm going to go hang out with some of my buddies. You go ahead and just you chill out over here on the couch.
Hey, they're making cake.
Yeah, they're making cake.
Why don't you go have a slice?
We also see very quick somebody chopping up nuts. Well, that's an interesting shot. While Peter's getting high with his buddies, Charlie ends up having some cake. Cool, man. Like, that's always a good time. Unless you're deathly allergic to nuts.
Yes. Which, they did squeeze that in.
Yeah.
In some dialogue already. Yeah. So, it's not a big surprise to the audience, but when they see the nuts getting chopped, it's like moment.
Yeah.
And it's just this big whole thing of plot devices playing out. Because we see the nuts. We see Peter ignoring his phone while he's getting high with his friends because his mom's calling.
Yeah. It's very, we've got like this almost Rube Goldberg Final Destination situation happening. Also, what I will nickname Chekhov's nuts.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't expect nuts to be a weapon, but here we are.
Yeah, because once Charlie has the cake with the nuts in it, the allergic reaction happens very fast.
Yeah.
Like, she's gasping, she's reaching for water.
Yeah.
She goes up to the room and is able to get Peter's attention, and they quickly leave.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, you're going to be all right. She's riding the back seat of the car. You know, he's high and a little panicked because you know, he's supposed to be watching his sister. Now she's possibly going to go into anaphylactic shock, mm-hmm. which is not great.
Which, why did they not bring an EpiPen with them if she has these kind of reactions?
Did they say, or I can't remember if they said earlier, if they were down to one or they didn't have one at all.
Yeah,
because I feel like they said something about it at some point.
Since they mentioned the nuts already, yeah, I can't remember. Gosh.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't make a note about that because I think when initially they bring up the EpiPen thing, I didn't pay any mind to it.
Right.
Not expecting it to be an important plot
right.
point.
Well, anywho.
Well, it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Peter's flying.
Yeah.
He's trying to get back home to save Charlie.
Yeah.
But
Charlie needs some fresh air.
Yeah, that...
When you're having a hard time breathing, you need some fresh air.
This does not work at all because, no. Ooh.
Well, I would say that it works too well because...
Well, yeah, because she's not having an allergic reaction anymore,
She's not having an allergic reaction anymore, and also any blockage that was happening is very clear.
Very clear.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, so what we're alluding to is, as Charlie... pokes her head out of the door to get the fresh air, her head goes smack right on a telephone pole, and she is instantly decapitated.
Yeah.
Yes, folks, they decapitated a child in a movie.
Yay.
Yay.
So brave. Peter just comes home and goes straight to bed.
Peter doesn't just go home. Peter is in a trance.
Yeah.
As soon as that head goes off, he just stares out into the road, drives home, is still staring as he walks through the house.
Yeah.
Lays down on his bed, stares until the morning time.
Yeah.
It is such a powerful, like, mm-hmm. reaction to seeing something like that happen.
And then the absolute gut-wrenching cries of Annie.
Yes. It's thinking about it sends chills down my spine.
It's upsetting.
It's so good.
It's
yes.
very upsetting. Like, just the inconsolable screams mm-hmm. of her when she discovers. Because it's not like he told anybody.
Yeah,
he didn't take her body out of the car.
Came in in a trance.
So, yeah, she wakes up in the morning, goes outside, finds the car with a decapitated body in it. Good God.
Mm-hmm. And... you see the scene of her, like, crying, too, and mm-hmm. Steve trying to console her. And she's just, like, on the ground, like, convulsing and stuff.
Yeah, just, like, vomiting tears.
It's so good.
Yeah.
She does such a good job in this film.
Yeah. It's to a point of being you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Especially if you've ever have experience being around somebody that was in that type of like deep despair, like it's just like, yeah, they knocked it out of the park. This is what it's like mm-hmm. when somebody is having an incredibly traumatic experience.
We as audience also get a good traumatic experience because we get to see the head and ants eating it and just cars flying by it.
Yeah. It sits for a beat.
It sits for an uncomfortable amount of time, and I love it.
Yeah, it's the first time in a very long time that I actually felt uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
where I was squirming a little bit in my seat. And I'm going to tell you, and if you haven't figured it out from listening to episodes prior, not a whole lot bothers me.
Yeah.
Like, I pretty much can sit through just about anything.
For me, it's the ants.
The ants is a big part of it.
Yeah.
I think it's the ants, but also how still it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, it sticks.
Ooh.
And it kind of, like, it gives you that, like, sudden mortality feeling. Like, where you go, God. Oh, God, like, there's nothing glamorous about death, and the ants prove that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. Okay, so can I tell my story about the first time that I watched this film?
Yeah, go nuts.
Right quick. So the first time I saw this film, I had just had surgery
mm-hmm.
on my hand, and I was at home, and this is the first time I ever had to take painkillers, and... I was alone, decided to watch Hereditary while trying to, you know, heal and whatnot. So I'm on those painkillers, and this was not a good movie to watch in that state.
I couldn't imagine.
Because that scene was even worse.
Yeah.
In that state. I was just like, Jesus Christ. So yeah, if you want an experience, watch this after surgery, I guess.
Oh God, don't do that. Don't take that advice. I couldn't fathom, because watching it stone cold sober is troubling.
Yes. I just remember, like, I put the covers over my face.
Yeah.
Because I was so like,
Well, I remember coming home from work.
Oh, yeah.
And you were still very much like, oh, I watched Hereditary. I'm like, oh, that arty horror film?
Yeah.
That, you know, quote, elevated horror nonsense? Like, how bad could it be? Now, you know, years later.
Yes.
Going, oh, geez, yeah, like.
So you can only imagine how it felt to me the first time.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine watching this movie by myself also.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I'd be very comfortable watching it alone, especially because, like, the movie starts to kind of slowly amp up from this point on.
Yes.
I mean, well, first of all, like, you get this cannon blast moment, and then the movie amps up. And just to kind of tighten it up a little bit, because we have a lot of family moments.
Yes.
And so,
and there's a lot of establishing creepy shots.
Yeah.
Like, establishing the spooky.
Yeah. A lot of, like, weird angles or shadows and
red lights and tree houses.
Yeah. A lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, the meat and potatoes of a good chunk of this, like, I would say the second third of the movie would be the incredibly strained relationship between Peter and his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Steve just kind of still being there, but not. He when things get out of hand, he'll say something.
Yeah.
Like, if they get too heated,
he should be more of a mediator.
Yes.
But he's not.
He's
a little laid back about the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, granted, like, who knows how, like, I assume it's always been like this, so.
Oh, yeah.
So he's probably just kind of tired of being the mediator.
Like,
maybe he just doesn't want to deal with it anymore. But yeah, like, obviously Annie holds a lot of pent-up aggression against Peter because, I mean, realistically, he killed his sister. Not intentionally, but, and we've discussed this, you know, off mic, but a lot of people are to blame for Charlie's death.
I think Annie's the one to blame.
I think
she
is.
Because she made her go to that damn party.
Yeah, I'll skip ahead a little bit. Just to kind of continue this conversation, because I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a dinner like scene where, you know, finally things come to a head and Annie's throwing blame to Peter. Peter throws it right back at her and goes, listen, you made me take Charlie to the party. Mm-hmm. So you're the one that killed her.
Yeah.
Like, it's not my fault. Like, that, because this would never have happened had you not forced her. She didn't want to go, and you made it happen.
If she hadn't been petty and just let her son go and be a teenager, then.
Unfortunately, with this comes Annie losing her fucking shit and, like, screaming, like, animalistic screaming at him.
Yet again, freaking amazing performance by Toni Collette.
Oh, yeah.
She's so scary during that part.
Yeah. To circle back.
Annie does go about her days.
Yeah.
And along the way, she ends up meeting this character named Joan, which Joan is...
Joan's harmless.
Yeah, but she does have a vibe about her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, so she's another member of the grief counseling, like, group. And ultimately, like, she learns about Charlie's death, and it's just like, I've lost my kid, I know what you're going through, if you ever need to talk to somebody, talk to me. And that's good for Annie to have somebody that has gone through something very, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, group therapy is a good thing. Like, talking to people that know, you know, similar experiences and stuff, it was very helpful. You should always have support
when
you're going through something tough.
Yeah, and Joan had lost her kids, so now...
Yeah, perfect.
Now Annie's got somebody to talk to about that particular kind of death.
Exactly. Annie ends up running into Joan much later on outside of a store. And Joan's just like, oh my God, Annie, you won't believe it. But I have this wonderful news. You have to meet me at my house because I had this amazing experience. I know this sounds crazy, but we did a seance and... we had results, and I got to talk to my son again. And he's like, okay, I know you from like one conversation ago.
Yeah.
There's a bit, and she's like, no, please, you have to believe me. And as most people that are going through deep grief, you seek solace in a lot of weird ways. And so Annie accepts this. And just like, so later on, she goes to Joan's house and just like, all right, let's do this. And so Joan starts to do the seance ritual, and holy shit, it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some very creepy things happen.
Yes, yeah. Annie's like, well, this has been cool. I gotta hit it.
During this time, too, we do actually learn a little bit more about her and Peter's relationship.
Yeah.
Including a time that Annie was sleepwalking and apparently threw paint thinner on him. Yeah. And tried to light him on fire.
That's not great.
If I was Peter, I would probably not have a great relationship with my mom either.
Yeah. Yeah. Considering the fact she did try to kill him.
I just wanted to make sure that the audience knew about that particular bit of relationship, because what the fuck?
Yeah, for real. Much later, Annie ends up seeing, like, she's, and I'm glad you brought that up, because she's very clearly sleepwalking.
Yes.
And how we can tell this is because she goes into Peter's room to kind of check on him and sees ants crawling across his face. What's so weird about that is I don't think she ever saw Charlie's head. Do we know? Did they ever find Charlie's head?
Well, the thing is, I can't remember if it was before or after this little scene. Mm-hmm. She's making a diorama of Charlie's murder scene.
That's right, yeah.
And the dad's like, what the hell are you doing? This is not how you grieve.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was before this.
Okay,
oh, they had to have found her head.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they would have shown.
Well, she had to identify it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So she probably did see
Why
it.
But you need to identify it. It's not like, does this road have a lot of
hey,
heads?
There could have been another decapitated person that they found in the night, and you just don't know.
So imagine the coroner going, throw it in the head bin.
Yeah. So, who knows who it belongs to?
Well, boys, we got another one.
It just happens so often in this area. You don't know, James.
Stay out of this county. Like this. Annie ends up waking everybody up to start her version of the seance process. She's had results. And so Peter and Steve are just like, what the fuck's happening? She's like, no, look. And she's got Annie's doodle book on the table. She's like, everyone hold each other's hands. And she starts asking if Charlie's there. And of course, initially nothing happens. And both Peter and Steve are very distraught by this because she's being crazy.
Yeah. They're definitely like, okay, mom has definitely lost it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But then the glass that's on the table moves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, holy shit, this is actually happening. You know, they react very much how she reacted the first time she saw it. And she's like, oh, my baby's here. But things take a little bit of a turn because Annie then gets possessed by Charlie. And this upsets Peter. He starts crying because at this moment, it just seems like Annie's just having an episode.
Yeah. Possibly trying to fuck Peter up some more.
Yeah. 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 Steve kind of shakes Annie out of her crazy Charlie trance and is just like, this just got to stop. Like, this is, we got to cool it on this, you know, this stuff, because this is not healthy, especially because of how upset Peter is. A traumatic experience like this for Peter definitely carries on into the next day at school.
Yeah, Peter at this point definitely has PTSD.
Yes.
Because he's like hallucinating. He's still in that kind of trance-like state that he's probably been in since the accident with Charlie.
Yeah.
And it's really wearing on him now.
I just can't believe that they had him going to school.
I know.
Like, first of all, I was very surprised that the kids were already going to school directly after the grandma's funeral.
Right.
But then him to be going to school directly after literally killing his sister.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a special situation where they would have just tried to graduate him out.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or,
I don't know.
Yeah. Some put him or
some
at least
sort of
give
homeschooling situation.
Or be off of school for a week.
This would have definitely been a special situation.
Yeah, because we never even see him. Typically, in a movie of this kind of concept, you would have at least seen Peter talking to a school counselor.
Yeah.
Or something.
And them telling him, oh, this is probably the best option for you right now.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
whatever.
Something like that. But instead, it's just him losing his fucking mind in class. And also, by the way, he ends up seeing that awful blue light effect.
Yep.
He even thinks it's crap. He gets, everyone gets jump scared because after seeing the blue light, he also hears Charlie's click that
mm-hmm,
she does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve ends up calling Annie, telling her that, hey, Peter's really upset.
Yeah.
And she's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
And she also gets a call from the gallery that's been waiting on her miniature work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious she ain't going to get it done.
No. Well, she's
especially not
get...
now yeah. because she decides to just go on a rampage and smash all of her work that she's been doing.
Yeah. Good job.
Yikes.
Yeah.
She really has gone off the deep end.
She goes into Charlie's room and sitting on Charlie's bed is her little drawing pad. And, sees drawings on it that weren't there before. Later on, Peter is in bed and he sees Charlie in the corner of the room,
mm-hmm.
and like arms come up and start pulling on him, and it's like, oh gee, like ghost arms, wonderful,
great,
except for the fact that it's actually perhaps Annie that's attacking him while he's sleeping.
Yeah,
what's happening now?
Yeah, so obviously Peter not having a good time.
No.
Annie not having a good time either.
No.
Because she's trying to burn the sketchbook now.
I think she's caught on that something awful is happening.
Yeah. So she's trying to do anything that she can to kind of stop this, I guess, haunting?
Yeah, yeah.
Is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
But she ends up getting burned herself in the process of trying to destroy the book. But she's able to put the fire out.
Yeah, thankfully.
Thankfully, I guess.
Yeah, she ends up going to Joan's house, I'm assuming to find out, like, how things are going with Joan and her ghost child. However, when Annie goes into Joan's place, she finds just a shit ton of occult stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, uh-oh, Joan went off the deep end here.
Yeah, well, this gets Annie to look through her mom's stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where she sees a picture of her and Joan.
Yeah.
So Joan was hanging out with her mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And also amongst all of her mom's stuff is some of the same occult things that she just saw at Joan's place. This is very troubling. It seems like Annie may be a part of something much larger than just grief counseling. In the attic, Annie also ends up finding the body of her mother.
What?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, things are really amping up during this part of the movie. And just spooky thing after spooky thing after spooky thing starts happening.
Yeah, yeah, because it is just a snowball effect where you have Annie quickly discovering that this shit is, like, a lot of stuff was in motion long before she had ever been aware.
Had nothing to do with ghosts this whole time, folks. No, it's a cult thing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Peter is at school and is getting haunted by Charlie some more, and then more or less gets possessed and smashes his face on his desk,
mm-hmm.
Which is not great. Steve ends up taking Peter home, and Annie's just like, okay, listen, Steve, I know this is going to sound nuts, but you have to come with me to the attic. My mother's body is up there. There's this whole cult thing going on. And he's just like, Annie, you're fucking crazy. Just stop. And she's like, please, please, please. She's begging him. She's pulling at him. He finally goes up into the attic and you just hear him scream because it's just like, yeah. Oh, there is a body. Now, Steve, not wanting to buy into the whole occult thing, just assumes that Annie is the one that earlier had desecrated her mother's grave.
Well, yeah, I would be blaming Annie too after the behavior I've been seeing from her.
This is, I feel like, maybe a little warranted, but quite the jump.
I mean, I don't know. As I said, like, if I was a psychiatrist and I was married to this woman That would be where my brain would go.
Like, okay, you know what? You're right, because of the fact that, I mean, we have to consider the fact that when they were much younger, she did try to set her son on fire.
Yeah, so exactly.
Maybe this isn't outside of the realm of possibility.
She could have been sleepwalking and got the body.
Ooh.
Hey?
I don't know.
Hey, this is a movie, James. This is a movie, yeah, sleepwalking.
Yeah, fugue
thank
state
you.
Stuff, whatever. All right. But anyway, yeah, he's just like, you've lost your damn mind. And she's like, no, listen, like, I don't know how the body got here, but there's this whole cult thing. And I've got this book, and mm-hmm. there's drawings in it, and there's drawings of Peter. And she's trying so hard to warn him, and he's just like, this is all nonsense. And
yeah, and she's trying to convince him to destroy the book for her, yeah, since she couldn't.
Yeah.
And so he does. He throws the book in there.
Yeah.
But
he catches on fire.
He goes up in flames immediately.
Yes.
Like just a whoosh of flame. And we get another freaking great scream from, yeah, Toni Collette.
Yes. Yeah. She's a scream queen 100,000%.
This is a very real reaction to seeing your partner just burst into flames, yeah, I think.
Yeah. Unknown amount of time has passed. Peter, he wakes up and is looking for his parents and is just kind of discovering that the house isn't doing so great. Also, we as the audience are dealing with the fact that Peter is being stalked by what I will call Demon Annie.
Yeah, very like, good way of putting it.
Like crawling across the wall and
that,
shit.
That is not Annie anymore, no, for no, no, sure. No. he comes across his dad's burned body.
Yeah.
Is very upset. He looks outside and sees a naked man outside the treehouse, which is also very upsetting.
Oh, is this going to turn to a crossover with the movie Men?
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm not ready to talk about that.
Oh, no.
That might have to be next Halloween A to Z. Yeah, spoiler alert, that's not our M movie.
No, no.
It will never be. Annie is chasing after him. This is, like, super intense. He runs up into the attic to escape from her. That's a smart move. Well, because it's not like she can, once you close the attic door, she can't get in.
True.
But unfortunately, I don't think he expected to be greeted by just a lot of fucking crazy that happens.
Yeah, the grandma's body is now all set up for ritual. We do kind of see a death scene of Annie, where, yeah, her neck like snaps.
Yeah.
And it's so like the sounds are so visceral.
Yeah.
And nasty. This movie's very good with the sound design.
So how do you want to handle this ending?
I actually don't know if I want to tell the audience the full ending.
Okay.
Because so much crazy happens in such a small little amount of time.
Yeah.
But it wraps up so beautifully.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what we'll do. All right. So, folks, we're going to pull that old Podcastmagoria trick that we've done in the past when we have a movie that is just too crazy to describe or too good to spoil.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've spoiled a lot for this film.
We have.
But
leading
this last bit.
Yeah. The fact that it all leads up to this final scene of the movie.
Yeah.
And it all comes together, yeah, in this last scene where you as the audience is like, oh,
yeah,
it makes sense of why all these weird little things were said throughout, yeah, the film. Ah, I get it. And then you as the audience also start to think back,
mm-hmm,
through the strange little scenes, like when Peter's going to the party, we see the pole that Charlie's head gets smashed on. The pole had the symbol for the cult on it.
And yeah.
Then you just start thinking about, yeah, all the weird things and, yeah, I just love it.
This movie, okay, so yeah, verdict goes, Autumn obviously loves it.
I love it.
I also genuinely love it. It's a movie that I haven't stopped thinking about since I've watched it.
It is one of those movies that stays with you.
I think that it's also a movie that deserves at least a second viewing because, mm-hmm, of all the hidden imagery and all the additional stuff that's, yeah, kind of going on. Once you realize what the movie's about and what is actually happening, going back and seeing it again, you will then appreciate a lot of the humdrum stuff, mm-hmm, that doesn't, like, especially, like, there's a lot of stuff that we glossed over,
yeah,
that, you know, as far as talking about the movie goes, kind of would bog it down in little details. However, all those little details, incredibly important, mm-hmm. from the yep. models to like how certain characters are filmed.
Yeah.
It actually matters.
It literally all has a purpose.
Yeah.
And because you know that now as the audience, when you go and watch that, just never take a moment for granted in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely well served, well done. It's easily one of my favorite movies, not just for the A to Z, but as a whole. Like, I think yes. it's up there for me. I'd say top 25.
I think it's actually
top 10.
Top 10 for Ooh. Me. Just because I love the visual. I love the story so much. As somebody that has mommy issues,
sure.
I identify with the film very much.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's a lot
yeah.
of uncomfortable moments in the movie that I would dare say are too real. If you've ever have witnessed dysfunctional family stuff, if you've been involved with it, sorry. But, but if you've had to be, you know, kind of a fly on the wall, stuck in a room with people that maybe don't get along very well.
Yeah.
It's not great. And they did a great job with that dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently there is, what was it? Like a whole other hour worth of footage? Like, cause
I think
there's,
so, yeah. There's like, there's an ultimate cut of this, I think.
Where it's just way more family stuff.
Yeah.
Just driving home, which I'm thankful. I don't want to see that.
I kind of do.
I don't
just
it's
because
not,
I'm such a fan of this film.
I'm it's not my speed, man.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. I don't like family dramas. I don't like that stuff. And, you know, maybe it's because I've witnessed a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, not to get into real life shit, but yeah,
nothing
scarier than real life. But but yeah, I don't. It's not. I don't need to see it.
I think that's why I like this movie a lot too,
yeah.
because it does play on the dysfunctional family horror so well.
Yeah, I mean, if you took out the supernatural aspects of it, it's still a very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's almost like you have two separate films put together, which typically would be a bad thing. However, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely recommend picking this up wherever you can.
100%.
It streams a little bit. It's an A24, and A24 is kind of weird, where they bounce back and forth between Paramount, Showtime, and then
Hulu
and Max. For I don't know what their
deal is.
Yeah, but they'll each one of those services will get A24 exclusively for about a year.
Yeah.
And then it moves on to the next one. And I don't get that. Criterion's like that too.
Yeah.
Where it'll bounce around. Hulu usually gets first crack at that
Criterion's
stuff.
Criterion's its own genre, James.
Well, so. Criterion also has its own streaming service. So, I mean, if you really want to go for that, just do that. But anyway, definitely seek it out. That brings us to the end of this episode of Podcast Movies Halloween A to Z. Our next episode is our I episode. I for It Follows.
Ooh.
Another one I have not seen.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, so
I don't know if I necessarily know anything about it, to be honest.
Kind of remember trailers for it back in the day, but I didn't give two craps about it. So we'll see if I'll regret that decision next time. Until next time, if you find yourself dealing with a whole lot of heavy situations... Oh, boy. All sorts of heavy, heavy stuff. Well, the best thing I can tell you is stay calm, don't lose your head, and most importantly, you must stay spooky.
Blah, blah, blah.
Bye. You've been listening to Podcast Magoria, hosted by Autumn Campbell and James Davis, theme by James Davis. Like what you heard? Be sure to follow us wherever you get podcasts. Be sure to check out our social media and TikTok for additional content and spooky previews for future projects. And as always, stay spooky.
Heheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheh